this fall. Peter, good morning. You're on the air with Dave Quist, my guest from the Institute Marriage and the Family.
Yes. I think we cannot legislate religion, no matter what. Religion belongs to God. It's the area of authority for God. And each religion has requirement for the followers to follow. For me, for example, as a Christian, when I read 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, God said, if you disobey me, I'm going to send the spirit of delusion on you. You'll be confused and you believe falsely in everything you put your hand in until you die. I cannot obey the law. I have to obey God and obey Christ. So there is a conflict here. Are we going to have a government official in every classroom, walking with every student to decide whether it is right or wrong? The pastors and the ministers and the priests, they are scared to death because they are working to help people. Then the law comes to squeeze them out of their religion, out of their faith, out of their family responsibilities.
Dave, are priests, ministers, imams, other religious leaders scared to death of government?
I think there is a concern there. Some of the pastors that I've talked to are very aware of the situation, and they're wondering how this legislation or lack of legislation is going to come down and what it will mean to them, to their parishioners, to their parish. And therefore they're questioning how it's going to work, what they're allowed to say from the pulpit. I know there are some pastors that are very concerned of what they cannot say from the pulpit right now, and that concerns them trying to balance their faith tenets against the law of the land.
Because they must cite scriptures for every statement they make.
Well, there's certainly that, but also the interpretation of that. I mean, whichever faith is that we're talking about here, there are certain scriptures that apply to these life situations, and they, you know, we look to those knowledgeable people to interpret that and lay out a course of action for our life, and that's a concern for us.
Daniel, you're on the air on CFRA. Do we need a Defense of Religions Act?
Well, let's just say I think we need a lot more than that, but that would be a good start, gentlemen. And we don't need to look that far back. The early Christian apostles had made a decision when they were being prohibited for preaching the gospel. They said, you judge for yourselves if it's better that we obey man or we obey God. And they went on to preach. They got persecuted, thrown into jail, killed, and so forth, but they kept it going. And we may end up in that same situation again. But we definitely need the best we can, and men like your guest to try to defend some of our rights. It's just to give us the freedom to do what we consciously feel we need to do.
Dave, do you think that the day is coming, I'm asking you for your personal beliefs here, that as we ration out health care and as more secularists, non-religious individuals come to the conclusion that euthanasia is a good thing and ought to be viewed as a mercy killing of someone who's come to the end of their useful life, do you think that the day is coming when, for example, an elderly person being prescribed a very expensive life-saving medication or life-prolonging medication might be denied that medication?
I think that debate is on the horizon right now. We've seen a private members bill brought by Bloc MP Francine Lalonde in the last parliament that talked about the Right of Dignity to Die Act. My understanding is that she's going to table that bill again in this parliament. Given a minority parliament, we don't know if it will come up or not, but she is, you know, that is the plan. We've seen at least four high-profile cases across Canada that have involved patient-assisted suicide or euthanasia. And it's for that reason that this Thursday, actually, we're hosting a seminar on Parliament Hill for interested members of the public, but also specifically for members of Parliament, senators, their staff, senior bureaucrats, and so on, bringing together one person, Bobby Schiavo, who is Terry Schiavo's brother, very high-profile case in the U.S. this last year and a half, and Dr. Margaret Cottle, who's a palliative care doctor out at the UBC Medical School. The question you asked is on the horizon, and the rationing is going to be coming down the road here.
Sometimes in the form of a court ruling that says, no, you do not have custody of that person. You are not the trustee of that person's care. The state will take the responsibility for being the trustee for that person's care, where there's a dispute in custody.
Right. There is a phrase that Dr. Cottle uses, and it says that euthanasia kills a patient twice. The first time when you're told by the doctor or the state that your life is not worth living anymore, the second time when you actually do succumb to whatever that treatment or lack of treatment may be.
So do you think that you need a Defense of Religions Act for priests or imams or any other religious leader to discuss euthanasia in the context of it being a crime against God's teachings?
I think we would. That would certainly be a part of that discussion. I think that the imams or the priests and the parish leaders need the right to be able to discuss those issues freely from their pulpit, from their podium, wherever they voice those opinions.
From the point of view of faith.
Absolutely.
So that these discussions are related to one's faith beliefs.
The faith tenets that we believe by.
Alan, you're on the air on CFRA. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Good, thank you. What's your call?
Well, I think I was very, very disturbed about your article about how they're going to shut down schools in Western Quebec because they don't fit in with the secular mold. And this is bordering on society deciding what you can think and what you can believe. I don't see that Canada was built to do this kind of thing. It's bad enough to sort of live in a society where if you're a creationist, society's attitude is you don't want to be one of those. And they enforce that, they communicate that very much in the school system by simply ignoring everybody else's ideas except their own.
Yeah, you can teach that creationist bunk in your church or in your Sunday school or in your temple, but you're not allowed to teach it in our schools.
Right. Yeah.
So that's essentially what they're saying.
God's only important in church. God doesn't exist outside of church.
Because that's essentially what they're saying, right?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what they're saying. Alan just mentioned about we can't talk about God outside of the church sort of thing, and I was reminded as I drove down Wellington Street, the Peace Tower embedded in the side, carved in the rock, is dominion from sea to sea. And many of your listeners may not realize, but that's a verse from Psalms, that when the country was being named as what do we call this great land of ours, that it was called a dominion because of a piece of scripture based in Psalms. And Alan is exactly right that, if we're going to compartmentalize things and say, well, you can only talk about certain things in certain places, that's not freedom of religion, that's not freedom of speech. And so we need an opportunity such as the Defense of Religions Act to say we are allowed to talk about these things in society as a whole. There's a difference between a theocracy, we're nowhere close to that, but we need the freedom to be able to talk about these things and express our opinion and points of view.
Jennifer, hi, you're on the air at CFRA.
I appreciate your addressing this issue and particularly in bringing Dr. Quist to address it. I was wondering if Dr. Quist would please comment on some possible negative aspects of a Defense of Religions Act, what it might bring. I think it's important to consider both positive and potential negative outcomes so that we're going into this with our eyes wide open.
Yeah, I want to talk about polygamy. is that one of the things that you might want to discuss, Jennifer?
Yes, possibly. I guess anyone who attaches himself to a particular religion would see that although there are a number of things that are in common amongst religions, there are also a number of things that are not.
Yes.
And so that could be quite challenging.
Yes. Okay, so let's use polygamy as an example. We had this in the news just the day before yesterday. 50 years in Bountiful, B.C., an offshoot, formerly part of the Mormon Church, but no longer part of the Mormon Church. This offshoot fundamentalist group began this practice of men having multiple wives, usually child brides, in the age group 14 to 16.
Right.
They still do.
Right.
It's against the law.
Right.
It is not being prosecuted.
Right.
It's not being prosecuted because they don't think that a prosecution would stand up in court under protections that are already in place for religious beliefs. So if the protections already in place for religious beliefs override laws against polygamy, either by offshoot branches of the Mormon Church or by the Muslim faith, people moving to Canada from other countries where polygamy is accepted widely under the religious beliefs, would acts like Defense of Religious Acts make those kinds of practices unacceptable, suddenly acceptable and legal?
Well, thank you, Jennifer, for the question. I thank you for calling me a doctor, but I'm not. That's a credential I haven't earned quite yet, so we'll hold that for the future. Your question, though, of the negative aspects of the Defense of Religious Act and specifically polygamy, I think that we need to recognize where certain laws came from and in turn what they do in our country here. If we're going to have freedom of religion, we also need to understand what the laws of the land are. And I think that those two things can work in tangent with each other in a positive way without being necessarily always in conflict with each other. For instance, polygamy, if we as a society in Canada say that this is wrong, then that is the law of our land. Religious groups such as the group in Bountiful should have the right to say we think it's right or we think it's acceptable, it should be good enough for us. However, if the laws of the land still say that it's wrong, then that is the law of the land.
The law of the land overrides the religious belief.
Well, you know, there is a piece of scripture that says, render to Caesar what is Caesar's and unto God what is God's, and to respect the laws of the land.
So within the context of gay marriage, if the religious belief is that gay marriage is outlawed by the faith, but the state decides it's acceptable, you want the protection of priests and other religious leaders and lay people.
And lay people.
To criticize gay marriage mm-hmm. as part of the debate.
Right. I think that's an important element to talk about there.
So you're talking freedom of speech.
It's a freedom of speech issue, and for many people it runs together with a freedom of religious aspect. If people are not able to speak their mind, and I don't mean in a hateful way. I mean there are people and groups that are extremists in every direction. But I mean just simply the freedom to be able to listen to my pastor on a Sunday morning, or if I'm having coffee with a group of friends in the backyard over the summertime, to be able to say, here's my opinion and here's why. I don't want to be prosecuted just by expressing that opinion.
And you think that door is currently open?
I think it's opening, and I think without clarification that it may fling wide open.
So Defense of Religions Act, you believe? I'm asking you this as a spokesperson for the Institute of Marriage and the Family.
I think it's a necessary thing. It's something that will give people greater protection for freedom of religion and freedom of speech as well.
Do you think the Harper government is going to bring it down?
I'm optimistic.
You're lobbying?
That's not my role. My role is research and to provide that information to the decision makers. I'm not an activist and I'm not a lobbyist, but I would certainly support it.
Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.